Welcome to the September 2023 edition of You Can Farm Talks. On this video podcast, as many of you know, we talk to people from the agriculture industry about topics that are important and relevant for new and beginning farmers and ranchers. These are short, focused, live online video podcast conversations. They usually last 20, 30 minutes. And we ask our guests to share their story as it relates to getting started in agriculture, and then to talk about one thing that they think anyone getting started in agriculture ought to know. For those tuning in to the live event, the live Zoom event that's going on now, we will have our usual brief Q&A after the initial conversation. So please submit your questions into the live chat window, and I will pick a couple of them, ask them at the end. All of the shows are recorded and posted online at the You Can Farm Talks webpage. We will respond to any additional questions that we can't get to during this live online discussion on the forum that you find there. So with all that said and everything kind of covered, I'm going to jump in and introduce our guest for today. Today's guest is James Sedman. James is a fourth generation Wyoming farmer and rancher. His family farm is homesteaded in the 1920s, and he's located south of Huntley, Wyoming. James earned his BA in agribusiness from the University of Wyoming, and then he eventually went on to get a master's degree in agricultural economics from UW as well. Then, after that, in 2003, he purchased the family farm from his grandparents. James runs a diversified operation with his wife, children, and parents, and that operation includes a commercial Angus herd, irrigated farming and haying, and a feedlot business. His crop mix is primarily focused on feed, and he grows alfalfa, corn, sorghum sedan, oats, rye, irrigated grass, and triticale. Outside of that farm work and all that free time that I'm sure James has with all that going on, James' wife, Leanne, is a language arts teacher at the local junior high and high school, and James makes use of his agricultural economics degree consulting. He's done quite a bit of risk management education work in conjunction with UW. So I'm going to introduce James here. I think we'll take the center stage in terms of the show tonight. I know I've seen that in addition to all that, I've also seen that you have at least one journal article that's been published, and you're the lead author, I might add, on that journal article, and you've written quite a few other things over the years. So seems like you're a bit of a scholar in addition to your career in agriculture. So anyway, welcome, James.
Thanks, Cole. I'm really happy to be here. This is a different experience for me. This will be fun.
Well, we're glad to have you. Thanks for coming and joining us. This is it's a fun opportunity. I'm excited. I think you've got a lot of good stuff to talk about especially for the audience that we're trying to reach. So I think it's great. So I know that you've seen some of the previous shows we've done, and I know that you're kind of familiar. We like to have all our guests tell a little bit about their story and their background. Sometimes that's how they got involved in agriculture. It might be on or off the farm, but you've done both. You got your advanced degree, and then you also went back to establish yourself on your home place. So I'm excited to have you tell us more about your story and how you got to where you are. What were some of the challenges, obstacles you faced getting there? How did you decide that, college was the right choice? Did you always know you were going to come back? That kind of thing. I mean, I think your journey is going to be really interesting, like I say, to the target audience that we're really looking at and who are trying to establish themselves or thinking about establishing themselves in agriculture. So, James, please tell us your story, your ag story.
Well, like you said, I grew up south of Huntley here, just actually just down the road from where I live now. My parents also have a farm close by. Worked at it my whole life. I mean, it was just kind of second nature. Went to the University of Wyoming and got my degrees. I initially, had started out thinking maybe I was going to be a banker, do something business wise, and the more you're away from it, sometimes the more you want to just go back to it and do it. And somewhere before grad school, I'd kind of decided this is what I wanted to do. But my parents were pretty insistent about, you know, get as much education as you can while you can, and always have a backup, you know. And that's pretty much where we started. I just kind of had gotten lucky. My grandfather had decided to sell the farm when I was in grad school, and one or two deals fell through before I came up with the financing. He had actually had contracts with other people, and they didn't work out. And this, it actually kind of a little divine providence, you know, your financing comes through in time, and you get what you need when you need it sometimes. But that's
preparation meets opportunity, and you're ready to go, huh?
Right. Right. Yeah. So 2004 was probably not the greatest year to start farming here, because it was one of the most brutal drought years you could have. You know, it was terrible. You know, two, 3 inches of rain and maybe 30 days of irrigating water. So it was tough. So I jumped in right in the middle of the fire. So you kind of, for good or bad, you know, that's how it worked out. But like I tell everybody, we survived it. So, you know, we try to move forward. So
that's a good way to start, right? You know, it's not, you know, you might as well start with hard, and then right. you don't have any unrealistic expectations.
Yep. You get an idea just how bad it can be sometimes. But
you continued and built from there.
Yeah, I got married the next year. I kind of got lucky too. I fell into working with John Hewlett through the university, so got to do some consulting just with the risk management side of things, and learned a lot along the way too. You know, learned a lot more about crop insurance than I ever dreamed I would, probably. And then started out, we did a lot of custom feeding. We always had an Angus cow herd. Started out doing a lot of custom feeding because that was pretty much what you could do, you know, when we started out with not a lot, you know, with not two nickels to rub together. So, and we kind of have morphed into more raising our own cattle, feeding our own cattle. We still do some custom feeding, but it's more selective, I would say. The deals we want to take, not the deals we have to take, you know.
Yeah. Did you build your herd in part doing the custom feeding to help you kind of grow your existing herd, or was that always?
Yeah, it was a way to start, you know. We were kind of like I said in my bio, I'm kind of picky about the cows we raise and the cattle we raise. So we don't buy any cattle. We, you know, raise them all, and they fit our program, and they do what we want them to do that way. But that takes time. So it's, you know, it's more of a long-term thing, but over the years it's worked out much better than trying to depend on the feedlot business in general, because as a smaller business, you can only go so far with that before you're either looking at expanding or, you know, looking at other things. So it's worth it. So
yeah, you've managed quite a few things. It sounds like different enterprises going on. As I mentioned, you're diversified. You've got several things, and I think you've taken a pretty intentional approach at how you wanted them to fit together. And it sounds like it's been pretty successful along the way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not that we haven't had our challenges, and our, you know, everybody has their train wrecks at some time, you know.
Yeah.
You try to learn from them and move on and do better the next year, you know.
Yeah. No, it sounds like an interesting, I could probably ask you more and go on that, because I think it's pretty interesting, you know, backstory about how you got going. But I guess, you know, kind of moving in is, you know, I also want to hear a lot about your about the, you know, we call it the one thing. So of course, you know, the main purpose here is we like to have everybody talk about one thing. Of course, there are lots of things that, you know, anybody who is involved in this could think of lots of things, and so we always really make everybody focus it down to one thing that, you know, that New and Beginning farmers need to know or keep in mind or be thinking about or whatever it is as they're getting ready to try to do this? And it'll give people food for thought on and some really good advice we've found over the various shows we've done in terms of starting an agricultural operation or getting into agriculture. But based on our previous conversations and your background and expertise, I think you're going to have some really good perspective to share and some insights for our audience. So we ended up titling your thing Long-Term Perspective, and I'm anxious to hear about it. So James, go ahead and tell us about your one thing for today.
Well, like you said, it's long-term focus. When I look back to when I started, a lot of the decisions I made were, I would say, not thinking long-term, not having a long-term either plan or perspective on things. You're just, and it's hard as a new producer. Naturally, you're excited. Yeah. You're looking at lots of things to do, especially this part of the world. You have lots of different things that are tugging at your time. Right. And you get caught up in the day-to-day stuff when you need to. One of the best things I can tell new producers is to do as much long-term planning as you can. Have some good, achievable objectives and goals for your operation, whatever that may be, whether that be if it's livestock, if it's crops, if it's something specialty. You know, think about where you want to be in 5 years, where you want to be in 10 years. Make them realistic, and know that this business, no matter what you do, especially in Wyoming, you've got to have a long-term focus, because in the short term, if you're chasing from year to year, trying to grow the best, what you think is going to be the best crop or whatever livestock enterprise you think is going to work that year, you're already behind. You need to have a long-term plan for what you want to do and stick with it, because you'll be prepared from a risk management perspective. You'll be prepared better for challenges, and you'll be prepared better for opportunities. I think you'll be there when, for instance, like now, when the cattle market is scorching hot, if you're in it long-term wise with a good cow-calf operation, you're going to capitalize, but you got to endure probably some down years in the meantime, and not look at selling in the downturn. You know, you don't want to be, it's the old cliche, you know, buy low, sell high. Well, you don't want to do the opposite either, you know? So for me, that's been one of the best things, is to look at things from a long-term perspective, be where you want to be, whether it's with our farming, whether with our cattle operation. From a long-term perspective too, you want to make long-term relationships. I mean, it's incredibly important for us to have a long-term relationship with our bank, with our suppliers, with our customers, with our neighbors. You know, you want to be somebody that people can rely on, and be the more long-term focus you have, I think the better off you are in those respects. I mean, especially in the downtimes, because there are always going to be some downtimes. The more long-term relationships you can build with people, the better prepared you are to deal with the bad times, you know. And that's, you know,
like we find in a lot of these things, it seems like the kinds of things that make for successful agricultural operations and agricultural operators, a lot of the same things that seem to work well in life across a lot of things. I mean, the idea of that consistency and being dependable and long-term investment. So it makes a lot of sense that making those investments in the long term in agriculture works as well. You see it, you know, you see those established producers that do well for those reasons. So That advice rings true, I think, to people.
Right. That's some of the best advice I've gotten over the years is find somebody that's doing it well and pick their brain on everything you can. I mean, you want to feed off of successful people, because even if you can take one thing away that helps you, the best, you know, that's the best, one of the best things you can do. For me, one of the hardest lessons I had to learn not having a long-term focus was you try to do too much a lot of times in this business. Sometimes you farm too many acres, or you try to run too many cattle or feed too many cattle, and you get overextended. And then you realize later on that you probably would have done a better job if you'd have just had a plan and stuck with it and make reasonable growth goals and not try to run the world, so to speak. That's one of the bigger lessons I had to learn.
Those are important lessons, and they're important for people to hear. I think especially people that are listening to this, trying to decide how to go about things like that. I know another thing that you mentioned in some of the previous stuff that we talked about was debt, and how to use debt, and how to sort of the role of some of the debt, you know, in that it's not, in other words, that it's not, you know, taboo, but it's, you kind of have to think about how to manage it. So I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add on that.
I think it falls right in with a long-term perspective that you need to, especially now with the way interest rates seem to be going, and it's tough. I mean, we've all been so spoiled for 20 years that it's been really easy to get low to no interest on a lot of stuff. And it's not there a lot of times anymore. So people are going to have to be a lot smarter about how you use debt, what you spend that debt on, you know, whether it's equipment, whether it's livestock, you know, you got to have a pretty good plan going forward on how you're going to use it. Because I think it's going to be really easy to get into trouble, especially variable rate stuff at this point. I mean, it a lot of times it's a necessary evil, but yeah, it's going to take some actual planning. And as a new producer, that's one of the things you tend to neglect a lot. You know, like I said, back to the day-to-day stuff, you're trying to get this done, you're trying to get the chores done, you're trying to feed, you're trying to do all this stuff, but you've got to take time and to map it out where you want to be. One of your previous guests, the financial statements, having a focus on financial statements long-term, extremely important. It's all a good way to set yourself and to know where you're at, you know, before something bad happens, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to think that you have no choice but to just follow your plan, and if it needs more money, then you borrow more money or whatever it is that, you know, but you, as you said, bringing in that, having the plan, you at least know, you know where you are, and you know whether that's gonna work in a longer context rather than just sort of shooting from the hip.
Right, yeah. Right. And you're better prepared that way for opportunities that do come along. You know, you're more apt to have an idea of what's going to work for you and not dive into something that's not, you know, not more of a fit for what you want to do. Whether, you know, like I said, whether that's cattle, whether that's crops, hay, any of it. I mean,
that's good. Well, actually that ties in. So we're getting kind of a little later, and I don't want to miss, and I did actually, that ties into a question that I had. So I had one of the Q&A question submitted. So let me ask you, it kind of fits into what you were just talking about. So, you know, your long-term relationships are important. Sometimes economics suggests your business needs to move forward. So how do you handle in that time where you do maybe move forward, how do you handle renegotiating the relationships you have, making those changes, I think, without burning bridges as you move forward? Are there any secrets to success to share on how to best do that?
I think it's pretty simple in that you have to be honest with people, and straightforward. Mm-hmm. And And back to the financial planning aspect of it, you have to know where you are financially and what's going to work with you. And it's tough to not deal with somebody that you've dealt with a long time, but you have to be willing to move forward as well. I agree. The best thing I think you can be is to just treat people well and try and be honest and upfront with them. If it doesn't work for you, make sure that what you're moving into is going to fit with your long-term objective too. I got nothing earth shattering on that, I guess, but I have been in those situations where you like an input supplier, but if they're just not consistently where you need them to be, you have to move on to somebody else. But, you know, sometimes that's the best thing too. So.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. You know who you are and you know you've done that planning. It's probably a little easier to make those decisions. So no, that makes a lot of sense. I have one more to get to. So you mentioned, you know, and it being newer, that, you know, conditions change. You know, you have to keep an eye on what's going on. And, you know, there's some train wrecks occasionally. So what are some of the road signs? How did you know, I think, ahead of time? What do you watch for? What is somebody in that situation looking for to see that they maybe are on the wrong track or headed to a wreck?
Financially speaking, I would say if you have a good grasp of your financial statements and where you're at financially, you'll have a pretty good feel of when something is going to get bad. That's back to the planning side of it, back to the looking forward thing. You have to have an idea, have to have some targets and some goals, and that works on the downside too. Now, if you're in a down market and it looks like it's going considerably worse, it you just have to be willing to soak up as much market information as you can to try and make the best decision. For us, it's a lot of market reports. I try to soak up as much of that as I can, just to kind of have a feel. And a lot of risk management, a lot of thinking about what the bad scenarios could be. I think if you map it out from a risk management perspective, you're much better prepared for when something does happen, I think. Whether it's insurance, whether it's using a futures market, using whatever risk management type planning you could do, would be my suggestion anyway.
Again, good advice. Good to kind of get that. Those are the kinds of things somebody's got to see how to make those decisions moving forward. So I'm going to sneak in one more. I'm going to try to get one more question to you before we have to finish it up. But I think I'm going to go with the one, you know, one thing that I know young, especially newer producers have to use leases a lot. I mean, I think it's a big part of often people who maybe in many cases, maybe they don't have a place where they really get an anchor point and they're trying to establish something. And they, you know, that really it's an important part of kind of getting established. So I was wondering if you have any insights from that long-term perspective of how to negotiate and build those relationships in a leasing relationship or leasing arrangement.
I think it takes a lot of work and a lot of time to get to the point where, and as a new producer, that's probably not what you want to hear to start with, but you've got to be somebody people can trust, and you've got to have an idea of what can work in your operation. For me, the leases I look at, I want them as long a term as possible, that we can that the landowner and I can come to an agreement that it's in the best interest for both of us to say 5 years, 10 years, as best with whatever renegotiation points people want for price. I think the longer term you can look on a lease, the better. It's just more stability. And absolutely, you're going to, as a new producer, that's probably going to be one of the main ways you'll work into something. It's going to take, but it takes time for people to know you, to trust you and respect you, that you're going to be able to hold up your end of the bargain. And that may take a different angle. That may take working for somebody for a landowner, before you can lease, move into a lease. It may take some creative ideas, I guess, is where I'm getting at, to get into a situation like that, because not everybody can just fall into a purchase agreement. And with as expensive as land is now, that's probably one of the ways you're going to have to look at it is from a leasing perspective.
That was what I was just thinking, was it's the kind of thing you don't have to have your operation going yet. It's where those dividends of all the things you did before you even had an operation, of investing in, you know, like you said, the long-term perspective, being trustable, being reliable, somebody who could, you know, who somebody's going to feel, developing those relationships doesn't mean you have to be operating already. So,
I would say being able to negotiate a lease that works for everybody, you know, realizing that nobody's going to be 100% what you want versus what the other guy wants. If you can work together, find somebody you can work with, that's the main key. And that's tough too. I mean, it's a challenge, but this is such a tough business to get into. You're going to have to put in a lot of work, for not a lot at times, if you want to be able to, like I said, to be able to show that you can step into a situation like that, whether it's a lease, whether it's an option to buy, whether it's any situation like that. So
yeah, they can't expect your dividends right away, right? I mean, that ties right into your long term. You invest a lot; those dividends get paid, and the returns that you get on that get paid later on. It seems like, you know, establishing something like you've done over years, that's when you start to reap the benefits of those things that you just can't generate immediately.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's great stuff. Any last things? I think we're about to the end. Any last thoughts before we're off?
It's not the sexiest thing as a producer, but the more just drill it home, the more planning, the more financial planning you can do for your operation and have an idea of where you want to be, where you are. All of that is so crucial anymore. Even when I started, you could work very hard and make it work. I'm not so sure now that you can work your butt off and still succeed without doing a lot of long-term planning. Would be my suggestion. It's a tough business. It's extremely rewarding for us as a family. There's no better place to raise a family than out on a farm or ranch. But it's going to be something that you're going to earn really, really well over the long term. So, I mean, you're going to work for it. There's no way around it. So,
well, I think you pointed out that, you know, those returns came to a lot of things, the hard work for sure, but, you know, your education that you put in, and, you know, thinking about things and being aware of things and developing relationships. So it has a lot of facets. And I think that's been a good takeaway is how many different ways that you have to invest to make this work. So, no, I think it's been great. Thank you very much. I think it's been really helpful. I really appreciate your perspective. I think it's been great. A great talk for our audience. So thank you, James.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this episode of the UCAN Talks. I want to thank those of you who took time to join the discussion live and submit your questions. That was great. The recording of this episode is going to get posted and archived on our website and on our YouTube page. If you have any other questions, or if you're watching a recorded episode and just didn't get a chance to ask them, please feel free to send those questions via email, or even better, add them to the online discussion forum at our webpage. We'll try to respond to as many as we can and share the answers online. Stay tuned for the next episode of You Can Farm Talks. And we're going to be sharing details about that, but I can give you a preview that it's the October episode will be coming out shortly. So stay tuned for that and check back to the show page and on our Facebook page. Funding for the program is provided by the USDA NIFA BFRDP program. We'd also like to thank Custom Ag Solutions, Right Risk, and especially our partners at University of Wyoming Extension. Thank you for listening to You Can Farm Talks.